By the end of 1941 it was photographed over the southern Atlantic on its way to the German cruiser Atlantis in Antarctic waters. It could not be used as a fighter though. The impulse steering allowed it only changes of direction at 90 degrees, 45 degrees or 22.6 degrees, but that is exactly the right angled flying pattern associated with and typical of UFOs today. After the success of a smaller FZ-2 as a distant reconnoiter craft, the Virill Gesellschaft got its own test area in Brandenburg. By the end of 1942 the lightly armed Virill 1 Jager, Virill 1 Fighter, was airborne. It measured 11.5 meters across, carried one person, had a Schumann levitator drive and a magnetic field impulse steering unit. It reached speeds of 2,900 to 12,000 kilometers per hour. Could change direction at a right angle at full speed without affecting the pilot, could fly in any weather and had a 100% space capability. 17 Virill 1s were built and some versions had two seats and glass domes. Also during this time another project was worked on, the V7. Several discs were built under this code, but with conventional jet engines. Andreas E. Pepe had designed a combination of levitating disc and jet propulsion, the RFZ-7. The design groups Schriever Habermoel and Maiev Belusa worked on it. The RFZ-7 had a diameter of 42 meters, it crashed on landing at Spitzingen. A second craft was later photographed outside Prague. According to Andreas Ipp, this craft was to be armed with nuclear head to attack New York. In July 1941 Schriever and Habermoel built a vertical takeoff round craft with jet propulsion, but it had severe shortcomings. They went on to develop an electrogravitational flying gyro with a tachyon drive which proved more successful. Then, Schriever, Habermoel and Belusa built the RFZ-7T that was fully functional. The V7 flying discs however were mere toys compared to the Virill and Hornbrew discs. Within the SS there was a group studying alternative energy, the SSE4, Development Group 4 of the Black Sun, whose main task was to render Germany independent of foreign oil. The SSE-4 developed from the existing Virill drives and the tachyon converter of Captain Hans Gohle the Thule drive which later was called the Thule tachyonator. In August 1939 the first RFZ-5 took off. It was an armed flying gyro with the odd name Hornbuoy. It was 25 meters across and carried a crew of 8. At first it reached a speed of 4.800 kilometers per hour, later up to 17,000 kilometers per hour. It was equipped with two 6 cm KSK, Kraftstrahlkanonen, power ray guns, in revolving towers and 4 machine guns, 106. It had 60% space capability. By the end of 1942 the Hornbrew II was ready. The diameters varied from 26 to 32 meters and their height from 9 to 11 meters. They carried between 9 and 20 people, had a Thule tachyonator drive and near the ground reached a speed of 6,000 kilometers per hour. It could fly in space and had a range of 55 flying hours. At this time there existed already plans for a large capacity craft, the Virill 7 with a diameter of 120 meters. A short while later the Hornbrew 3, the showpiece of all discs, was ready, with 71 meters across. It was filmed flying. It could transport 32 men, could remain airborne for 8 weeks and reached at least 7,000 kilometers per hour, according to documents in the secret SS archives up to 40,000 kilometers per hour. Virgil Armstrong, former CIA member and Green Beret, writes about German flying machines during World War II that could take off vertically and fly at right angles. They were 107, measured at 3,000 km per hour and had a laser weapon, probably the so-called KSK power ray gun, that could pierce 4-inch armor. Professor J. Hertak, UFOlogist and author of The Keys of Enoch, writes that the German were in the process of building what the Allies called the Wonder Weapon System. Hotak got protocols that described to events. The erection of a space city at Pinamund and the enlistment and transport to the US of the best technicians and scientists from Germany. He also mentions the meticulous examination of the so-called Foo Fighters. The CIA and the British Secret Service knew already in 1942 about the construction and the use of these flying objects, but they were off in their evaluation. Foo Fighters actually was the Allies' name for all glowing German flying machines. Probably there were two inventions that actually corresponded to the term Foo Fighters, the flying turtle and the soap bubble. Two completely different objects that the Allies held for one. The flying turtle was developed by the SSC4 at Vienna Neustadt. Its outer shape recalled the shell of a turtle. They were unmanned probes that could cause disruption in the electric ignition systems of the enemy. They carried advanced klystron tubes, that the SS called death rays. The ignition disruptor did not work perfectly at the outset, later follow-up versions did, however, and the UFOlogist will confirm that disruption of ignition, the cutting of electrical power to equipment, is a typical sign when a UFO is near. When Delcy Stevens, U.S. Air Force pilot during the Second World War, describes the Foo Fighters as sometimes gray-green, then red-orange, they approached his aircraft to about 5 meters and then stayed there. They could not be shaken off nor shot down, and often they caused squadrons to turn back to land. The soap bubbles that were also called Foo Fighters were something completely different, though. They were simple balloons in which there were metal spirals that disturbed enemy radar. The success probably was very limited, disregarding the psychological effect. At the beginning of 1943, it was planned to build in their Zeppelin works a cigar-shaped mothership. The Andromeda device of a length of 139 meters should transport several saucer-shaped craft in its body for flights of long duration, interstellar flights. By Christmas 1943, an important meeting of the Viril Gesellschaft took place in the seaside resort of Kolberg. The two mediums Marie Ortig and Sigrun attended. The main item on the agenda was the Aldebaran project. The mediums had received precise information about the habitable planets around the sun Aldebaran, and one began to plan a trip there. At a January 22, 1944 meeting between Hitler, Himmler, Kunkel, of the Viril Society, and Dr. Schumann, this project was discussed. It was planned to send the Viril 7 large-capacity craft through a dimension channel independent of the speed of light to Aldebaran. According to Rathefer, a first test flight in the dimension channel took place in the winter of 1944. It barely missed disaster, for photographs show the Viril 7 after the flight looking as if it had been flying for 100 years. The outer skin was looking aged and was damaged in several places. On February 14, 1944, the supersonic helicopter, constructed by Schriever and Habermoll under the V-7 project, that was equipped with 12 turbo units BMW-028, was flown by the test pilot Joachim Rohlik at Pinamund. The vertical rate of ascent was 800 meters per minute, it reached a height of 24,200 meters and in horizontal flight a speed of 2,200 kilometers per hour. It could also be driven with unconventional energy. But the helicopter never saw action since Pinamund was bombed in 1944, and the subsequent move to Prague didn't work out either, because the Americans and the Russians occupied Prague before the flying machines were ready again. Gun, that could pierce 4-inch armor. Professor J. Hertak, UFOlogist and author of The Keys of Enoch, writes that the German were in the process of building what the Allies called the Wonder Weapon System. Hertak got protocols that described to events. The erection of a space city at Pinamund and the enlistment and transport to the US of the best technicians and scientists from Germany. He also mentions the meticulous examination of the so-called Foo Fighters. The CIA and the British Secret Service knew already in 1942 about the construction and the use of these flying objects, but they were off in their evaluation. Foo Fighters actually was the Allies' name for all glowing German flying machines. Probably there were two inventions that actually corresponded to the term Foo Fighters, the flying turtle and the soap bubble. Two completely different objects that the Allies held for one. The flying turtle was developed by the SSC4 at Vienna Neustadt. Its outer shape recalled the shell of a turtle. They were unmanned probes that could cause disruption in the electric ignition systems of the enemy. They carried advanced Klystron-Erin, Klystron tubes, that the SS called death rays. The ignition disruptor did not work perfectly at the outset, later follow-up versions did, however, and the UFO logist will confirm that disruption of ignition, the cutting of electrical power to equipment, is a typical sign when a UFO is near. When Del C. Stevens, U.S. Air Force pilot during the Second World War, describes the Foo Fighters as sometimes gray-green, then red-orange, they approached his aircraft to about 5 meters and then stayed there. They could not be shaken off nor shot down, and often they caused squadrons to turn back to land. The soap bubbles that were also called Foo Fighters were something completely different, though. They were simple balloons in which there were metal spirals that disturbed enemy radar. The success probably was very limited, disregarding the psychological effect. At the beginning of 1943, it was planned to build in their Zeppelin works a cigar-shaped mother ship. The Andromeda device of a length of 139 meters should transport several saucer-shaped craft in its body for flights of long duration, interstellar flights. By Christmas 1943, an important meeting of the Viril Gesellschaft took place in the seaside resort of Kohlberg. The two mediums Marie Ortig and Sieg Run attended. The main item on the agenda was the Aldebaran project. The mediums had received precise information about the habitable planets around the sun Aldebaran, and one began to plan a trip there. At a January 22, 1944 meeting between Hitler, Himmler, Kunkel, of the Viril Society, and Dr. Schumann, this project was discussed. It was planned to send the Viril 7 large-capacity craft through a dimension channel independent of the speed of light to Aldebaran. According to Rathefer, a first test flight in the dimension channel took place in the winter of 1944. It barely missed disaster, for photographs show the Viril 7 after the flight looking as if it had been flying for 100 years. The outer skin was looking aged and was damaged in several places. On February 14, 1944, the supersonic helicopter, constructed by Schriever and Habermoll under the V-7 project, that was equipped with 12 turbo units BMW 028, was flown by the test pilot Joachim Rohleik at Peenemünde, and the vertical rate of ascent was 800 meters per minute. It reached a height of 24,200 meters and in horizontal flight a speed of 2,200 kilometers per hour. It could also be driven with unconventional energy. But the helicopter never saw action since Peenemünde was bombed in 1944, and the subsequent move to Prague didn't work out either, because the Americans and the Russians occupied Prague before the flying machines were ready again. 108. In the secret archives of the SS, and the Americans discovered, during the occupation of Germany at the beginning of 1945, photographs of the Hornbrew 2 and the Viril 1 crafts, as well as of the Andromeda device. Due to President Truman's decision in March 1946, the War Fleet Command of the U.S. gave permission to collect material of the German high technology experiments. Under the Operation Paperclip, German scientists who had worked in secret were brought to the U.S. privately, among them Victor Schaub, Erwin Wernher von Braun. A short summary of the developments that were meant to be produced in series. The first project was led by Professor Dr. W. O. Schumann of the Technical University of Munich. Under his guidance, 17 disc-shaped flying machines with a diameter of 11.5 meters were built. The so-called Viril 1 Jager, Viril 1 fighters, that made 84 test flights. At least one Viril 7 and Viril 7 large capacity craft apparently started from Brandenburg, after the whole test area had been blown up, towards Aldebaran with some of the Viril scientists and lodge members. The second project was run by the SS4 development group. Until the beginning of 1945 they had three different sizes of bell-shaped space gyros built, the Hornbuoy, 25 meters diameter, two machines built that made 50 to test flights, speed 4,800 kilometers per hour. The Hornbuoy 2, 32 meters diameter, seven machines built that made 106 test flights, speed 6,000 kilometers per hour. The Hornbuoy 2 was already planned for series production. Tenders were asked from the Dornier and Junkers aircraft manufacturers, and at the end of March 1945 the decision was made in favor of Dornier. The official name for the heavy craft was to be DuSTRA, Dornier Stratospheric Craft. The Hornbuoy 3, 71 meters diameter, only one machine built that made at least 19 test flights, speed 7,000 kilometers per hour. The Andromeda device existed on the drawing board. It was 139 meters long and had hangars for one Hornbuoy 2, two Viril I's and two Viril II's. There are documents showing that the Viril 7 large capacity craft had started for secret, still earthbound, missions after it was finished and test flown by the end of 1944. A landing at the Mondsee in the Salzkammer Ergot in Austria, with dives to test the pressure resistance of the hull. Probably in March and April 1945 the Viril 7 was stationed in the Alpenfestung, Alpine Fortress, for security and strategic reasons, form once it flew to Spain to get important personalities who had fled there safely to South America and Nashwabenland. Explanation follows, to the secret German bases erected there during the war. Immediately after this the Viril 7 is said to have started on a secret flight to Japan, about which however nothing further is known. What happened to these flying machines after the war? It cannot be excluded that a small series of the Hornbuoy might have been built. The several photographs of UFOs that emerged after 1945 with the typical features of these German constructions suggest as much. Some say that some of them had been sunk into the Austrian Mondsee, others maintain that they were flown to South America or brought there in parts. It is certain though that if the crafts didn't get to South America, the plans that did allowed for new ones to be built and flown there, for an important part had been used in 1983 in the Phoenix Project, the follow-on project of the 1943 Philadelphia experiment. This was a teleportation, materialization and time travel experiment of the U.S. Navy that was more successful than you could imagine in your wildest dreams. There is enough material for another book, but it does not fit too well into our subject here. In 1938 a German expedition to the Antarctic was made with the aircraft carrier Schwabenland, Swabia. 600,000 square kilometers of an ice-free area with lakes and mountains were occupation of Germany at the beginning of 1945. Photographs of the Hornbuoy 2 and the Viril 1 crafts as well as of the Andromeda device. Due to President Truman's decision in March 1946 the War Fleet Command of the U.S. gave permission to collect material of the German high-technology experiments. Under the Operation Paperclip, German scientists who had worked in secret were brought to the U.S. privately, among them Victor Schaube, Erwin Werner von Braun. A short summary of the developments that were meant to be produced in series. The first project was led by Professor Dr. W. O. Schumann of the Technical University of Munich. Under his guidance 17 disc-shaped flying machines with a diameter of 11.5 meters were built. The so-called Viril 1 Jager, Viril 1 fighters, that made 84 test flights. At least one Viril 7 and Viril 7 large capacity craft apparently started from Brandenburg, after the whole test area had been blown up, towards Aldebaran with some of the Viril scientists and lodge members. The second project was run by the SS4 development group. Until the beginning of 1945, they had three different sizes of bell-shaped space gyros built: the Hornbuoy, 25 meters diameter, to machines built that made 50 to test flights, speed 4,800 kilometers per hour; the Hornbuoy 2, 32 meters diameter, 7 machines built that made 106 test flights, speed 6,000 kilometers per hour. The Hornbuoy 2 was already planned for series production. Tenders were asked from the Dornier and Junkers aircraft manufacturers, and at the end of March 1945 the decision was made in favor of Dornier. The official name for the heavy craft was to be DSTRA, Dornier Stratospheric Craft. The Hornbuoy 3, 71 meters diameter, only one machine built that made at least 19 test flights, speed 7,000 kilometers per hour. The Andromeda device existed on the drawing board. It was 139 meters long and had hangars for one Hornbuoy 2, two Viril I's and two Viril II's. There are documents showing that the Viril 7 large capacity craft had started for secret, still earthbound, missions after it was finished and test flown by the end of 1944. A landing at the Monsee in the Salzkammer Ergot in Austria, with dives to test the pressure resistance of the hull. Probably in March and April 1945, the Viril 7 was stationed in the Alpenfestung, Alpine Fortress, for security and strategic reasons, from whence it flew to Spain to get important personalities who had fled there safely to South America and Nordschwabenland. Explanation follows: to the secret German bases erected there during the war. Immediately after this, the Viril 7 is said to have started on a secret flight to Japan, about which, however, nothing further is known. What happened to these flying machines after the war? It cannot be excluded that a small series of the Hornbuoy 2 might have been built. The several photographs of UFOs that emerged after 1945 with the typical features of these German constructions suggest as much. Some say that some of them had been sunk in kilometers of an ice-free area with lakes and mountains were 109 declared German territory, the Nordschwabenland, New Swabia. Whole fleets of submarines of the 21 and 23 series were later headed towards Nordschwabenland. Today about 100 German submarines are still unaccounted for, some equipped with the water snorkel, a device that allowed them to stay submerged for several weeks, and it can be assumed that they fled to Nordschwabenland with the dismantled flying discs or at least the construction plans. Again, it must be assumed that since the test flights had been very successful, some so-called flying saucers have flown directly there at the end of the war. Perhaps some may think these assumptions to be a bit on the daring side, but there are strong indications that it may well have happened that way. There is a question why in 1947 Admiral E. Byrd led an invasion of the Antarctic, why he had 4,000 soldiers, a man of war, a fully equipped aircraft carrier and a functioning supply system at his command if it was a mere expedition. He had been given 8 months for the exercise, but they had to stop after 8 weeks and high losses of planes undisclosed even today. What had happened? Later Admiral Byrd spoke to the press, "It is the bitter reality that in the case of a new war one had to expect attacks by planes that could fly from pole to pole." Further, he added that there was an advanced civilization down there that used their excellent technologies together with the SS. Norbert Jürgen Rathofer writes about the whereabouts of the Hornbuoy developments in his book Zeitmaschinen, Time Machines, the Hornbuoy 1, 2 and 3 space gyros and the Viril I space flying disc had disappeared after May 1945. It is very interesting to note in the context that after its 19th test flight the German Hornbuoy 3 is said to have taken off on April 21, 1945, from Nordschwabenland, a vast, officially German territory in the eastern Antarctic, for an expedition to Mars, about which there is nothing further known. 1 year later, in 1946, the many sightings that suddenly occurred in Scandinavia of shining objects of unknown and definitely artificial origin caused a great stir among the Allies in East and West. Again 1 year later, in 1947, and well into the 50s, a rising number of shining unknown flying objects, doubtlessly steered by intelligent beings mostly round, disc or bell-shaped, sometimes cigar-shaped, so-called UFOs appeared over North America. The text goes on to say that as a rule these objects were unlike the German developments. I beg to differ. Good photographic material proves that the Hornbrew II version especially had been sighted very often since 1945. If you have wrestled with what is available in the UFO world for 10 years as I have, that is a significantly high percentage of the cases where personal contacts with the people from the so-called UFOs were made. These were with especially beautiful Aryan types, blonde and blue-eyed, and that they either spoke fluent German or another language with a German accent. For insiders I would refer to the Adamski case of 1952, the Cedric Gallingham case of 1954 and the Howard Menger case of 1956. It is further said that color photographs taken by a night guard in West Germany in the 70s exist of a landed and restarted flying disc that had both a Knight's Cross and a swastika on its hull. The flying machines just mentioned are well documented on photographs and films. There is the 60 Minutes documentary UFO, Secrets of the Third Reich. The American Vladimir Terzisky gave a 3-hour speech at the September 1991 UFO conference in Phoenix, Arizona, where he showed slides of German sources, construction plans and subterranean German bases. Also of interest are the book by the Italian Air Force commander Renato Vesco and the book by Rudolf Luser Die Deutschen Waffen und Geheimwaffen des Witten Weltkrieges an die Erweiterung und Entwicklung. The German Arms and Secret Weapons of the Second World War and Their Development, J.F. Lehmann's Verlag, Munich 1971. Submarines of the 21 and 23 series were later headed towards Neuschwabenland. Today about 100 German submarines are still unaccounted for, some equipped with the water snorkel, a device that allowed them to stay submerged for several weeks. And it can be assumed that they fled to Neuschwabenland with the dismantled flying discs or at least the construction plans. Again, it must be assumed that since the test flights had been very successful, some so-called flying saucers have flown directly there at the end of the war. Perhaps some may think these assumptions to be a bit on the daring side, but there are strong indications that it may well have happened that way. There is a question why in 1947 Admiral E. Byrd led an invasion of the Antarctic, why he had 4,000 soldiers, a man of war, a fully equipped aircraft carrier and a functioning supply system at his command if it was a mere expedition. He had been given 8 months for the exercise, but they had to stop after 8 weeks and high losses of planes undisclosed even today. What had happened? Later Admiral Byrd spoke to the press, "It is the bitter reality that in the case of a new war one had to expect attacks by planes that could fly from pole to pole." Further he added that there was an advanced civilization down there that used their excellent technologies together with the SS. Norbert Jürgen Rathofer writes about the whereabouts of the Hornbrew developments in his book Zeitmaschinen, Time Machines, the Hornbrew 1. 2 and 3 space gyros and the Vril I space flying disc had disappeared after May 1945. It is very interesting to note in the context that after its 19th test flight the German Hornbrew 3 is said to have taken off on April 21, 1945, from Neuschwabenland, a vast, officially German territory in the eastern Antarctic, for an expedition to Mars, about which there is nothing further known. 1 year later, in 1946, the many sightings that suddenly occurred in Scandinavia of shining objects of unknown and definitely artificial origin caused a great stir among the Allies in East and West. Again 1 year later, in 1947, and well into the 50s, a rising number of shining unknown flying objects, doubtlessly steered by intelligent beings mostly round, disc or bell-shaped, sometimes cigar-shaped, so-called UFOs appeared over North America. The text goes on to say that as a rule these objects were unlike the German developments. I beg to differ. Good photographic material proves that the Hornbrew II version especially had been cited very often since 1945,